Hello and welcome to another Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with my friend and Wednesday Conversation co-producer, Bethany Gilbert. Typically, every Wednesday, we sit down with Pastor Bob and Pastor Dusty and Pastor Chris Hummelman, and we talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're going to kind of veer off from what we normally do and kind of end the year with a best of 2017 episode. We're going to look back. And Bethany, you're gonna help me do that. Like I said, you're kind of like my co-producer.
Yes, I'm the Wednesday Conversation's biggest fan.
Yeah,
because I listen to every episode because I have to.
Multiple times, even some weeks. So yeah, you literally sit down after we're done recording and you put the episode together. You make it sound like
I make Bob and Chris sound like they know what they're talking about.
Yes.
Which is really hard because most of the time they don't. And you and Dusty are the ones who really, I feel like, have a good grasp on what's going on most of the time. So
Bethany, she does a lot of the legwork with this podcast. And so Bethany, I'm grateful for you and the work that you put into this. We're gonna look back, like I said, on the year. And you know, we came out of Trump's election last November, a year ago, and so that kind of dominated a lot of the things that we talked about, how to be a Christian in a world that seems like it's rapidly changing.
Yeah.
We talked about hell a lot. For some reason, there's a handful of episodes where we talked about what hell is and what we believe about that. We had a 6-7 week long series on contraception.
Everybody's favorite.
Some people thought that felt like hell, having to listen to 7 episodes. But no, it was a good topic for us to tackle, and we were able to bring other voices into that to help us converse. But we're going to talk about some lighthearted things from 2017, and also some serious things to even consider as we're entering into Advent now, Advent and Christmas season, and entering into 2018. And so, let's just jump right in.
Let's start with my personal favorite, the LuLaRoe episode.
Yes.
And not just because I was on it, but mostly because, no, I'm totally joking.
Yeah, no, that was a really fun episode because I think we said, hey, let's do this because we've been talking about some pretty heavy stuff. Let's do something not so serious.
And that was a listener question, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So again, just like last week, people send in your questions and your observations that you're seeing in the world. podcast@cdomaha.com. We listen to you. You listen to us, and then we listen to you, and we make episodes that you can listen to based off the questions that you send us. So, the first one that we're going to kind of go back to and listen to again is the multi-level marketing episode.
The title is Multi-Level Marketing Companies Like LuLaRoe Are Forcing People Into Debt and Psychological Crisis.
Wow.
So it's a little bit it's a little clickbaity headline. I'm not going to kid you. But the article is very good. Here's the article's essential, and it focuses on LuLaRoe as sort of the point of the article, but here's the sort of broad strokes of the article. There are 20 million Americans right now participating in direct sales through multi-level marketing. So that's a big chunk of the population. This includes things like Herbalife, Plexus, Young Living, Pampered Chef, Rodan and Fields, yada, yada, yada. There's a bunch of these. Back in the old days, it was Avon and Mary Kay, and you know, it's all that kind of stuff. This article basically is saying these flourish disproportionately in suburban and rural America. One of the fascinating stats in the article is there's only 10 LuLaRoe consultants in all of Manhattan, 1.64 million people. But Pueblo, Colorado has the same number for its 110,000 people. So yeah, it's one of those things that obviously flourishes sort of in particular contexts. LuLaRoe was founded in 2012, so it's only 5 years old. It's generated $1 billion in sales. So it's a pretty successful little concept. And the article basically follows a few different consultants for LuLaRoe and observes the ways that multi-level marketing companies can be full of high expectations that don't deliver. The Federal Trade Commission observes that 99% of people who join multi-level marketing companies lose money. But, man, these things are all the rage. And the listener who asked us to talk about this said, hey, I get a Facebook invite for a LuLaRoe party about once a week. Is this the real deal, Bethany?
This is true. I envy you guys because you probably don't get invited to these things.
I certainly like, don't.
That's what we need. Wife does.
Yeah.
We need to start a man-focused MLM.
Is there any
I'm sure there's some
focused...
getting started right now.
Yeah.
Beard oil. There are some
beard
coming,
oil.
Coming
okay.
next week.
So we picked it up and after discussing that article, we shared some stories.
Yeah.
Personal stories of our interactions with people trying to get us to be a part of the MLM or to just get us to buy and be customers. Bethany, you shared some stories with your experience. You actually just experienced more of that. Bring us into the recent invitation you got.
Yeah. So I shared a story on that podcast about how someone in RGC had reached out to me. And I thought it was just for friendship, but turns out it was because they wanted me to buy stuff from them. But yeah, it's kind of an incessant thing, especially for women. I recently got a Facebook message and we're approaching the holidays and this message was totally manipulative. That was just like, hey, help make my Christmas special by buying stuff so I can get these gifts. And it's still out there. It runs rampant.
Yeah. And so your friend or acquaintance on Facebook was using those manipulative words and tones to try to get you to come to that party.
Yeah.
And what we continued on in the conversation was in the church, this can damage relationships and it can hinder the gospel in ways that you just don't want to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're gonna jump back into the conversation and pick it up there.
Again, there's not necessarily anything wrong with these businesses in and of themselves. People are free in their own conscience to pursue these kinds of opportunities, but within the church, this complicates and corrupts community in some really subtle ways. Sure. And we need to be honest about that. And we need to seek some sort of a healthy, what sort of a healthy way of interacting with people and having true community in the midst of folks who are consultants for these different multi-level marketing businesses.
So Bethany is one who receives a lot of invites.
Facebook invites.
How do you think, what does this look like? Like, what would it look like for you to experience it in a non-obnoxious way or a way that you think isn't kind of corrupting community and making things weird? Because I'm just curious from like someone who's actually experiencing this regularly, we talk about it kind of hypothetically.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think it's kind of just going back to what you were saying, Bob, like if you put an invite out or you have a party and you invite women or friends from your GC or from your church and they don't show up. I mean,
They
don't hate you. Yeah. It's just, don't take it as personally as you might want to actually take it. It's, I think the other thing to keep in mind is like, I mean, you're a retailer, so you're selling something. And so you want your friends, you want your brothers and sisters in Christ to be wise with their money. And so you're asking for them to buy a product and I guess honor the fact that they might not be able to afford it or
Dave Ramsey might not be supportive of their purchase.
Exactly.
They don't have money in the envelope this month.
Exactly.
The LuLaRoe envelope.
You got a separate envelope for that.
Yes.
Dave would be proud.
Yeah.
Hashtag Dave's proud. This
is so, LuLaRoe, Arbonne, all those things. We talked about all those things. Check out the podcast. It's that episode in particular because if you haven't listened to it yet, it's fascinating that as we kind of went through that article and talked about just the effects that those things have on community. And, you know, we talked about Facebook. And how that's used to kind of manipulate people into coming to your party.
Yep.
We're gonna shift the kind of lighthearted conversation about that to something more serious. This year we talked about technology and smartphones, and we Pastor Dusty did a review on Andy Crouch's book, The Tech Wise Family, and that book's been well received in our church. Mm-hmm. It's a good book full of lots of information and stats. Right after we did that podcast, an article came out in The Atlantic. Just asking the question, are smartphones killing a generation? And so in that episode, Bob went through some stats that were in that article, and we're going to pick it up there.
The arrival of the smartphone has radically changed every aspect of teenagers' lives, from the nature of their social interactions to their mental health. Here is some of the data that she traces out in this article. She mentions the Monitoring the Future survey, which is a survey funded by the National Institute on Drug Abuse. It's been going on since 1975. And she says the results could not be clearer. Teens who spend more time than average on screen activities are more likely to be unhappy. And those who spend more time than average on non-screen activities are more likely to be happy. There's not a single exception. All screen activities are linked to less happiness, and all non-screen activities are linked to more happiness. She goes on to quote these stats. Eighth graders who are heavy users of social media increase their risk of depression by 27%. Teens who spend 3 hours a day or more on electronic devices are 35% more likely to have a risk factor for suicide. Boys' depressive symptoms increased by 21% from 2012 to 2015, while girls increased by 50%. In 3 years, although the rates increased for both sexes, three times as many 12 to 14-year-old girls killed themselves in 2015 as in 2007, and twice as many boys. This is fascinating. Since 2007, the homicide rate among teens has declined, but the suicide rate has increased. As teens have started spending less time together, they've become less likely to kill one another and more likely to kill themselves. In 2011, for the first time in 24 years, the teen suicide rate was higher than the teen homicide rate. 57% more teens were sleep deprived in 2015 than in 1991. Now, as a researcher, she notes it's difficult to trace the precise paths of causation. It could be that smartphones are causing depression, or that people are feeling more depressed because and that causes them to go to their smartphones. But she's just saying, as you analyze all the data, it seems that there's a strong correlation between the rise in smartphone use among teens and serious mental health concerns, serious suicide concerns, serious depression concerns. What she traces out in the article is, hey, today's teens are safer. They're not going out as much. They're not partying as much. They're not drinking as much. They're not having risky sex as much. All the things that sort of used to characterize teenage rebellion, they're actually, those stats are much better for this current generation, the iGen, as she calls them. So that's a brief summary of the article. Again, you can find it online at The Atlantic if you want to read the whole thing, but I just wanted to sort of summarize the data. And then, guys, I wanted to invite the conversation about what does this suggest as we look at this research? Number one, what are the opportunities here for the church? Number two, what are the important takeaways for parents, for youth ministry volunteers, for those working with, concerned about, and invested in the lives of youth and teenagers?
Man, so that article... Are smartphones killing a generation? Had some pretty intense stats there. It even made me pause and wonder about my use of technology in my home. And hearing all those again was eye-opening. Yeah.
And I think that this podcast came at like a really good time. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of people respond to it on Facebook and on Twitter saying like, thank you so much for talking about this or for recommending the book.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of parents are just wondering like, how do we engage this right now with our kids? Because it's totally a growing problem.
Yeah.
And we had a Raising Godly Kids conference back in November where we devoted time to a session talking about technology with kids and in the home. So it's definitely becoming a bigger issue. So later in the podcast, Dusty lays out what Andy Crouch calls the 10 commitments.
Ten commitments, yep.
Yep. Let's go ahead and take a listen to that because it's real good.
Yeah, so Crouch gives, he doesn't call them the Ten Commandments. He calls them ten commitments that his family has. And I'm kind of like, yeah, that's good. Maybe I'm always like, well, 10's too many. but he lays out the book with 10 commitments that they have as a family. For example, one of those is car time is conversation time. Mm. So they're committed to not having, you know, the DVD player in the van, stuff like that.
What if when they're driving to Montana?
Yeah.
It's a long drive.
Yeah. I thought about emailing Crouch and saying, you don't go 860 miles from Nebraska to Montana. But so like, I actually think he would. So here's the crazy, one of his commitments that got me the most was, and you might think this is a little legalistic, but they don't have any screens until kids are in their double digits.
That's
so
good.
Basically what they say is until a kid is 10, double digits, no screen time.
And then
the scary part is you're kind of like, oh, that's kind of intense. But then he gives you stats on what happens to a 3-year-old, to a 4-year-old when they're introduced to screens at a young age. And, you know, as a dad, it's super helpful that he's writing this, not as a 60-year-old man concerned about it, but he's a dad living it out right now. And then, you know, as a dad of a 4-year-old, my 4-year-old right now is super, like, he loves iPads, you know, stuff like that. So you start to see like, that's interesting. He's 4. So Crouch has his commitment to no screens. He goes into how he and his wife didn't even have a TV until their kids were in the double digit ages, stuff like that. You're kind of like, well, okay, maybe. So you got to read it through, you know, just like any work, you got to eat the meat, spit out the bones. But he has 10 commitments. That's some examples of how he lays out the book. And throughout the book, tons of data that you just kind of go, I need to think about that.
So yeah, that episode caused me and Jenny to really reevaluate the place of technology in our home.
Mm-hmm.
And those 10 commitments were good. We plug in our phones at night in the kitchen. We don't take them into our bedroom. We moved our TV off the wall onto a cart. And when we're done watching a movie with the kids, we wheel it away so that it's not,
yeah,
not in the front and center of our living room anymore. So super insightful, episode, couple episodes that series, on the Atlantic article was one episode, and then the TechWise family was another. We'll link all of these episodes that we're talking about in the episode notes so that if you want to revisit them, you can go to them directly. One of the other episodes that we did that people really enjoyed, it was helpful to people, was the episode that we did on SAD, Seasonal Affective Disorder. Bethany, can you give us just a short description of what that is?
Yeah. So seasonal affective disorder is something that affects people generally in the winter months, as the days get shorter and they're darker. And it's kind of basically characterized by just depression, a feeling of loneliness, isolation, and general sadness. So we had our good friend Darby Whaley come and talk about how she has been affected by seasonal affective disorder. And it turned out to be one of like the most highly rated episodes. And it's one of my favorite episodes. So yeah, let's take a listen.
Yeah, let's listen in.
Can you describe Darby? So I think everybody can identify with like emotional melancholy. Tell us more about when you're in this sort of darker season. Where does that take you spiritually and psychologically? So I imagine that with an emotional downcastness, you're probably more prone to go to places that sort of connect to that. Does that make sense? So what do you find yourself like, in addition to just, I feel kind of bluesy, what comes with that in terms of the broader sort of internal life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll talk about that first, and then we can talk about what the spiritual ramifications are for me. So I think the biggest piece of my experience with seasonal affective disorder is that I feel kind of permeable in a way that I don't normally feel in terms of the way that I empathize with other people's pain. I have to be really careful with the news, honestly. That's something that affects me deeply. Current events, I'm more empathetic probably with people that I know personally, but I have less ability to relate in a realistic way to the events that are happening way outside my life. I don't relate to them in a healthy, realistic way. I internalize them in a way that is crippling to me at times. So I feel like my empathic capacities are way bigger during this season. So there are good properties of that because I can connect with compassion with other people more. And then there are ways in which that is harmful to me and slows me down and sort of gums up my gears because I'm doing emotional work for situations that I have no control over or access to, but I am emotionally present to those things. So this sense, that's what I mean when I say permeability. Like I feel like I'm internalizing things that are not in fact my business. and yet I don't want to say that that's bad. I don't think that that's all bad because of the way that it's, I mean, empathy is a good trait in the right proportion.
I think permeability is a great word.
That's really the helpful. Experience. Yeah. It feels like there's a flow. Things are able to flow in that if I was in a stronger, steadier place would not flow in quite the same way. Like I would understand them and feel bad about them, but they wouldn't hit me. I wouldn't be carrying them physically. Like I feel like I kind of am sometimes like in my chest is like, ugh, ugh. Yeah.
Darby, what with seasons like Advent, and even Lent happening during this time of year, how valuable are things like that in the church calendar to help you? I mean, you mentioned scripture, but just even the church calendar just kind of helped driving these.
Yeah, you know that's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for that question, because you know I love to talk about it. I heard somebody say one time, it was on Twitter, I can't remember who said it, that we wouldn't need spiritual directors if we engaged the rhythms of the church calendar, like if we engaged the year and what the year offers us at different times, it would really progress us along in our walk with God. And I thought that was really, really interesting. I don't know if I totally agree because I think I still need spiritual direction. Mm-hmm. But the idea that each season is putting out a question for you to reckon with is, I think that's so brilliant because you may need other questions than the one you think you need. Mm. And that's what, it's great having something outside you to tell you, no, actually, let's turn our attention to this, So we're in Epiphany right now and coming up to Lent. I don't know if I can handle Lent this year. I'm already doing so much soul searching and lamentation.
March.
I don't
it's
know what
March.
To do. It's all of March. I'm just going to have to hit the fish fries. I don't know what else I don't know what I'm going to do.
You're going to need vacation in March.
Yeah, we're going to have to figure something out in March. But anyway, Epiphany is a time of God revealing himself. So I don't know what that means necessarily. And I don't have I haven't had any mystic visions of God revealing himself or anything to me, but if I am sitting regularly with a listening heart and with that question, Lord, what are you going to reveal? What are you showing me? He will show up for that. He really does show up for that. So I don't know. I love the church calendar as a devotional tool that forces us kind of to just change up the question and for me, that's a hopeful question to say, Lord, what are you going to show me? Instead of oh, Lord, I feel so sad. Oh, Lord, all the things happening in the world. I can do that for hours and hours. I can just, that's my dwelling. That's my habitation. And the question needs to be something else.
Man, I could listen to that episode again, just the whole thing. If we had time, I'd put a lot more clips in there. We mentioned the church calendar. We're in the season of Advent right now. We're in the first week of Advent. And so I don't necessarily have SAD, seasonal affective disorder. I do struggle with depression and sadness at times, but not in particular to wintertime. I love what Darby said about it causes us to ask questions that we don't always want to ask.
Yeah.
So seasons like Advent, seasons like Lent cause us, they force us to ask the question, what do I need to repent of? For Advent is the coming of the Lord. When Christ returns, am I going to be seen as faithful or am I unfaithful? Lord, seek me and know me. Help me see where I am not following, not obeying you. Lent, even more so, looking at the cross and seeing what Christ did, and ultimately finding hope in the resurrection, but asking those questions, Lord, where have I sinned? What sins did you bear on the cross that I'm unaware of? And so I'm thankful for the church calendar. It's something that we're learning to use at Quorum Deo. It's something I'm learning to use personally. And so lots of resources out there. The Daily Liturgy Podcast is one of those resources that we've put out for our church to kind of help people think through a daily routine. And it's focused on the church calendar. We started at Advent and we roll it out all the way through Lent and Easter and through Ordinary Time, through Christ the King Sunday, the last Sunday of the church calendar. So I'm thankful for resources like that. I'm thankful for Darby being so vulnerable in that episode.
Yeah, Mike. And speaking of Lent, remember the time that Bob and Chris got into a friendly argument about whether or not Jesus descended to the dead?
Oh, yes.
That was fun.
Yeah.
We should listen to it.
Maybe not. I mean, I don't know if we have time to put in the whole argument. They went back and forth for a while. Like I said, the link will be in the episode notes. Listen to it. It's entertaining and insightful. It was an insightful conversation. Yeah. Bethany, here's another thing that's popping into my memory. Earlier in May, we had James K. Smith in Omaha. We brought him in.
Yes.
Do you remember when Bob expressed his man crush?
Man crush. That was the word
James
he used.
James K. Smith.
That was weird.
Yeah. Let's.
But we should listen to it.
Let's listen to that one.
Yeah.
I'm looking for that kind of complexity. I think complexity is not something Christians should fear. I think it's something that we should embrace. Hmm.
Well, I think one of the reasons I sort of have a man crush on you, unapologetically.
Wow.
Yeah, we can say that here. This is a safe, honest community. Is that I would say that I had intuitions that I feel like you put words to for me. So when I had these intuitions about here's how I think Christians need to relate to culture, and I don't really see it the way I want to, and here's what I think the church needs to do in worship, but I'm not sure where to look for that. And so I felt like as a church planter, I was sort of intuiting certain things about the church's relationship to culture and to history. So when I started reading your stuff, I was like, right here, this. Mm. And what it did for me is it gave me actually the feeling like I'm not crazy to sense these things. And, oh good, there's people who know what they're doing in these areas that can be sort of tour guides for me and translators of how I need to sharpen my own thinking in these areas. So I've really appreciated that about your work. And I think I speak for probably many who...
That means a lot to me. In some ways, that's the most encouraging thing. Because I feel like...
So there you have it.
That was great.
Bob expressing that on the episode, man crush on James K. Smith.
To his face.
To his face. So we're going to end 2017 on that note.
Yay!
It was a good year for the Wednesday Conversation. Thank you for listening. We're going to take the rest of the month off so that you can enjoy life.
Advent.
Maybe turn off the podcast, get off social media for the month of December, and just enjoy, be present with those around you.
Reflect.
Yes, reflect on the joy and the hope of the Advent and Christmas season. The fact that Jesus has come and he is coming again, and that's what our hope is in. Well, we invite you to join us next year for another Wednesday Conversation. Feel free to shoot us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com, if you have some topics you'd like us to tackle in 2018. Or shoot us a tweet @QuorumDeoOmaha. Actually, no, because we won't. We're not on Twitter in the month of December. So don't tweet at us.
We won't respond.
Just email us. And we'll see you again in January of 2018 for another Wednesday Conversation.